WMMC HD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Enlightened philosophers tell us that we are divine beings in human form. Let's get real here. How can we live a busy life with a job, kids, and a mortgage and still be spiritual? Join CJ Liu as she tackles real life issues through a spiritual lens and talks with experts in relationships, work, and more. You'll get practical life skills and learn how to touch, feel, and experience a whole new way of living. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on fireitupwithcj.com and call CJ now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
Live from the headquarters of CBS Sky Radio, Fired Up with CJ now at www.fireitupwithcj.com. For the next 4 weeks, we'll be exploring hope and why it is so critical to not only our own mental and physical well-being, but also the planet's future. Hi there, CJ.
Hey, welcome, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
I'm excited today. I have Dr. Sadir here, Lori Sadir, and welcome everybody to the Fired Up with CJ show. And we're going to start off talking about hope because I think it's one of the most critical things. It seems from reading the book, it's mentioned several different times. Lloyd, we're talking today about Dr. Lloyd Sadir's book, The Family Guide to Mental Health Care. In his book, he mentioned several times why hope is so critical. And so I wanted to start off, and welcome Dr. Sadir.
Hey, I'm glad to be here with you. It's actually Sederer, like Federer, the tennis player.
Okay,
call
Sederer.
Me Lloyd, but call me Lloyd.
Apologize. Okay, so Lloyd. So I wanted to first start off with, you actually have a great story about Dr. Carol North, and to me that was really inspiring about her struggle with mental illness and how she does overcome it, and I was wondering if you could start off the segment by just sharing that story with us.
Delighted to, and actually Dr. North just had an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association about Katrina and about mental health in the wake of that disaster that came out yesterday. So the timing is very good. Dr. Carol North is a psychiatrist in Texas, whom I met when I became a mental health commissioner in New York City, and I arrived here after 9/11, and my office was responsible for tending to the mental health problems in the wake of the bombings of 9/11. And that was just such an awful event that stirred all kinds of distress and mental problems in a city of 8 million people. And I immediately turned to a number of national experts, one of whom was Dr. Carol North, who I'd met earlier, but I knew she was an expert on disaster and mental health, and she was a terrific coach to me during those years of trying to be responsive to the needs of New Yorkers. And it was only a few years later that somebody mentioned, oh, did you read Carol's book, which was the title, I don't have it right with me, but it was something like Listen or something like that. And it was the story of her experience of having a series of psychotic episodes when she was first in college and then at the beginning of medical school, and how these caused her back then to have to leave school for a while, to believe that she wouldn't be able to have a successful future. And in fact, she was able to build a life. She was able to put that illness behind her and go on to a career where she's advising the White House, advising mental health commissioners like I was in New York City at that time, and even to today, where we've had Hurricane Sandy and as a medical director in New York State. So Carol North is an example of somebody who suffered serious mental illness in her late adolescence, early adulthood, and went on to put that behind her and to make a life, a terrific life with not only work but marriage and family. And she's just an example of hope of how people can make a life even though they may have had an illness.
And is she the, you know, when you look at her story, was it because she had the comprehensive treatment that you talk about in your book, The Family Guide to Mental Health Care, that she had, she was taking the proper medicines, she was getting the correct counseling and help? I mean, did she talk a little bit about what got her there?
Yeah, that's really important, that pretending that the illness is not there, or trying to say, well, I'll just let it let time go by, is not the right answer. And in fact, there's a strong association between adolescents who have psychotic illness that's not treated and they're later becoming disabled, mentally disabled, unable to function in school and at work, according to how long their illness is not treated. That's called duration of untreated illness. And the longer that illness goes untreated, the more likely that young person is going to have a life of disability. And this is related to the progression of that mental disease in the brain. So early intervention, early treatment is essential to preventing later disability. And treatment, as I think you were also suggesting, is not just being on medication, though sometimes medication is necessary. It's about therapy. It's about a family, working with family to help them create the kind of environment that somebody needs for support. It's often about also helping people regain certain skills. Their thinking may have been troubled for a while. They may lose some ground. They may need some skill development in their thinking and their work tasks. So it's that comprehensive treatment that's essential for people being able to have a serious illness, recover, and build a productive life.
So is it a presupposition, or do you know that, in fact, Dr. North did these things earlier on, which is, in fact, why she can live a productive life now? Is that...
She's one of many examples of people who did have comprehensive treatment and it made a difference in her life.
Wow, interesting. Okay, now tell me a little bit. I mean, what's one of the things that when I was reading a book on hope, they talk about having realistic goals. You know, it's one thing, you know, to not wish things, but also have realistic goals. What are some, you know, and you had said that in your book, you talk about people being to have productive, happy, and full lives. And is that a realistic goal? I mean, and what are the kind of, what are the realities that someone has to face if they have a mental illness?
Yes.
And what are realistic goals?
Yes. Well, you know, I find it's always critical to start with asking people what they want. And sometimes we may think, well, boy, that makes a lot of sense. Or sometimes we may think, well, that's a little odd. Or we may think, well, that's, you know, being an astronaut, there are not too many people that are going to succeed. But you want to start the conversation with where somebody is at. Not what we think or even the family thinks are goals for somebody, but what a person's goals are, because that's where you begin to then build a partnership. Well, okay, those are your goals. Let's think about what you need to do to achieve them. Most people have pretty realistic goals, and their goals of being able to work, being able to, if they're a teenager or a young adult, to have friendships, to have a date, to be able to live independently, and to have dignity in their life. And those often are goals that may be different from a doctor, who may say, well, I think this person is, you know, we have to improve the way that they're eating or sleeping, or they may actually be hearing voices and we need to reduce those voices. Well, that's true, but when you are trying to form a partnership, an effective treatment partnership with a person, you start by understanding their goals. If their goals may be really, you know, to be an astronaut, then you say, okay, well, you know, where does that start? Doesn't that start with being able to go to school? And then you start to begin to then get closer to what are the next steps somebody can do and what do they need to do to take those steps.
Okay, and then one of the things, and I think that that's great, already get to what I'm hearing, is that I think that sometimes, and I don't know if this is true, it seems like there's so much stigma in society about mental illness, but I wonder to what extent that just prevents a person from even thinking that these goals are possible. Do you think that sometimes comes in play?
stigma does not help. You're absolutely right about that. And it may be the stigma that friends and community people in your own community or school may subject you to. And it also can be how somebody feels about themselves. So part of the work, part of the conversation is being able to help somebody recognize that, you know, that they're a real person, they've got real needs, and that they don't have to be ashamed of who they are. And you know, that seems to be often a problem, self-esteem, how people regard themselves is a problem that's not unique to people with mental illness. Most people have these kind of troubles, and most people do need to come to accept themselves and to whether they're ill or not, and it can be harder if they have an illness. And it's true also of people who have other kinds of illness, people who are youth who have diabetes, for example, or may have some neurological problem or serious asthma. So it is about people coming to appreciate that they're a unique person, and they need to make a life, and the more they can come to accept themselves, the less vulnerable they're going to be to those people who may want to pick on them or discriminate against them.
I think when I was reading your book, The Family Guide to Mental Health Care, one of the two things that were pivotal to me as a coach when I read the book were that people making sure as a family member not identifying your loved one with the illness. So it's, you know, that's my cousin James. He's schizophrenic, right? So that's the only thing hints, right? His identity is he's James. He's not a schizophrenic. And you'd say it, and you aptly say in your book, you wouldn't say, that's my Uncle Sam. He has asthma. I mean, he would never say that. But yet, with mental illness, somehow we've grown accustomed to actually identifying the mental illness with that person and their identity, which I think is actually super important as family members to be conscious of. Well, the other thing that you said in your book and that you just referred to is that mental illness is like any illness. It's just something that happens. It's so different. I mean, it's different, of course, in terms of its symptoms, but it's similar to someone who has diabetes, cancer. I mean, it's an illness that we need to all accept and deal with come up with proper solutions versus, I think, have a stigma against where somehow that person is diminished. I mean, they're no more diminished than a person who has cancer, or, you know what I mean? Those are the two takeaways. Did I get those right, those takeaways?
Yes, indeed. And in some ways, they are different faces of the same coin, that being able to separate out you from your illness. It's not that you're a cancer. You may have a tumor. It's not that you're diabetic. It's that you have diabetes. Or even if you have some type of muscle problems and you can't walk, you may be paralyzed, you're not a paralytic, you're a person with a disability. And so separating out the illness from a person's identity is the first step. And then that puts you in a position to think then, how do you manage an illness? And that has a lot to do with getting good treatment, but it also has a lot to do with taking good care of yourself, having good relationships, thinking about the way that you manage your stress, the right kind of nutrition, exercise, the ways that we all can enhance our ability to have a life with more wellness. So illness management is contingent on being able to think of yourself as having an illness, and you're a person who's going to make a life even though you have an illness.
And I think in the next segment we're going to be talking about some of the things that you talked about this segment, which is, you know, what is your responsibility as a family member for taking care of your loved ones who may have a mental illness? So don't go away. We'll be right back, and we're going to be talking more to Dr. Lloyd and his book, The Family Guide to Mental Health Care. We'll be right back.